Welcome. Good morning. We bid you welcome who are seekers of a new faith. We bid you welcome who come with hope in your hearts that the world can be made better by doing what we can and by being who we might yet be. We bid you welcome who enter this hall for the first time. We bid you welcome for whom this morning is a homecoming. Whoever you are, whatever you are, wherever you are on your journey, we bid you welcome. Destiny, would you care to step forward? We have a designated chalice lighter this morning. Destiny's agreed to light the chalice. May this light burn brightly within us, that Destiny is now lighting, in our search for faith, hope, and love. Now and always. I bring your attention to the announcements that are on the back of one of the pages of the bulletin. And not having received any others before the service, however, I was commanded before I left home, in the sense of community, those of you who wish, there will be dill, mint, and basil in the kitchen from the community gardens after the service. Please help yourselves. Please stand as you are able and join us in our first hymn, number 346, Come Sing a Song with Me. And I guess Michael will be our leader. Thank you, Michael. Yeah.
Would the children like to come forward for the children's moment? Good morning. Thank you for introducing yourself. Okay, we're going to have a story about walls this morning. Would you like to make a wall with your hands? I'm going to tell you two stories about walls, and then we'll just think a little bit about how they're the same and how they're different. So the first story is about Joshua and the Battle of Jericho. There's a really cool song about that that maybe you can learn sometime. But right now, we're just going to think about the wall around Jericho. So Joshua tells the people that the way to get into Jericho, the way to make the wall come down, is to walk around the wall all week silently with just some trumpets playing. Okay, so you think about that. There's a city with the wall around it, and the people walked around it silently with just trumpets for 7 days. And then finally, on the last day, Joshua said, okay, this is the day we're going to shout, and the walls will come tumbling down. And that's exactly what happened. So the people walked around the wall for 7 days, the trumpets were playing, and on the last day they shouted, shout, and the walls came tumbling down. Okay, so that's our first story. The second story is the Butter Battle from the Butter Battle book by Dr. Seuss. You know Dr. Seuss? Have you ever heard of Dr. Seuss? I think Unitarian Universalist children know Dr. Seuss. Okay, so this book is about building a wall between the Yooks and the Zooks. So the Yooks were on one side of the wall, and the Zooks were on the other side of the wall. And once they built the wall, they didn't know each other anymore. So they started just making up things about each other. And they made up bad things about each other because they didn't know each other. So pretty soon they started hating each other, and then they got kind of scared, and they made weapons so that they could hurt each other and cause trouble across the wall. So in the end of the story, interestingly, Dr. Seuss comes to no resolution. He just says, there was the wall, and there were the Yooks and the Zooks, and they just kept on hating each other because the wall separated them. So of those two stories, which do you think Unitarian Universalists want to pay attention to? What do we like to do when we're faced with a wall? That's a kind of interesting question. If there was a wall and there were people on both sides, would we want the wall to tumble down, or would we want the wall to get higher and people to get farther apart? Any ideas? I know you're pretty young. This is a little abstract. Maybe I can just tell you. Unitarian Universalists want walls to come down between people so that they can connect with each other and we can really get to know each other. Okay, that's what we do as Unitarian Universalists. So have a really fun time in the garden today.
Go now in peace.
I guess we're doing a bit of a tag team this morning. This is the portion of our service in which those of you who have personal joys or personal concerns that you would wish to share with those in the fellowship, please do so. And Sarah will be walking around with the microphone to amplify your voices.
Thank you. I'm sorry to have to give bad news, but my friend Don McKee died this last week, and he died at the hospice. He had started out with dementia, and it got more and more serious until. And I wanted to say that when I was helping him through this long stage, I would say the earlier stage, that when I would get sick, I would call the Unitarians, and Kathleen, Old Father helped a lot, and some others too, came to the rescue. And I wish I could say everybody's name who helped.
You can. I have a positive thing from our Unitarian Universalist Association president, Peter Morales, he just sent a note out yesterday, Friday, that he was in court in Phoenix because a previous year he had done some civil disobedience in Phoenix, standing up for the rights of immigrants and opposing the terrible conditions in the jail there, the county jail. So I just want to lift that up, that he's not only being a religious leader, he's also being an activist and living out Unitarian Universalist values, even to the point of going to court.
Thus following in the long footsteps of other UUs over the decades. Okay, well, we share with you those joys and concerns just expressed, and for those still lying within your hearts. Yeah?
Thank you. Please turn to responsive reading number 531 in your hymnal. It's from Ralph Emerson. It's got a lot of words, so don't rush when you're reading together. Let us learn the revelation of all nature and thought, that the highest dwells within us, that the sources of nature are in our own minds. I'm constrained every moment to acknowledge a higher origin for events than the will I call mine. Every moment when the individual feels invaded by it is memorable. The soul's health consists in the fullness of its reception. Within us is the soul of the whole, the wise silence, the universal beauty to which every part and particle is equally related, the eternal one.
We now ask for your continued generosity in supporting the good work of this fellowship and the many programs undertaken to improve the lives of those in our community.
Thank you, Paul Robeson, and whoever made that happen. Mending Wall by Robert Frost. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that sends the frozen groundswell under it and spills the upper boulders in the sun and makes gaps even two can pass abreast. The work of hunters is another thing. I have come after them and made repair where they have left not one stone on a stone. But they would have the rabbit out of hiding to please the yelping dogs. The gaps, I mean, no one has seen them made or heard them made. But at spring mending time, we find them there. I let my neighbor know beyond the hill, and on a day we meet to walk the line and set the wall between us once again. We keep the wall between us as we go, to each the boulders that have fallen to each. And some are loaves, and some so nearly balls we have to use a spell to make them balance. Stay where you are until our backs are turned. We wear our fingers rough with handling them. Oh, just another kind of outdoor game. One on a side. It comes to little more. There where it is, we do not need the wall. He is all pine and I'm all apple orchard. My apple trees will never get across and eat the cones under his pines, I tell him. He only says, good fences make good neighbors. Spring is the mischief in me, and I wonder if I could put a notion in his head. Why do they make good neighbors? Isn't it where there are cows? But here there are no cows. Before I built a wall, I'd ask to know what I was walling in or walling out and to whom I was likely to give offense. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that wants it down. I could say elves to him, but it's not elves exactly, and I'd rather he said it for himself. I see him there bringing a stone grasped firmly by the top in each hand like an old stone savage armed. He moves in darkness, it's as it seems to me, not of woods only in the shade of trees. He will not go behind his father's saying, and he likes having thought of it so well, he says again, good fences make good neighbors. Let's have a moment of silence together. Blessed be. And the walls came tumbling down. What a great image. The story of Joshua leading a battle to take Jericho, where the first weapons were trumpets encircling and shouting that led to the walls tumbling down, could be about the power of the spiritual in relation to the material and the strength of each voice when raised together. It can be interpreted as a story about being connected with God, as Emerson described, so that there's no bar or wall in the soul where we begin and God ends, or where we end and God begins. And that's what leads to deep power. With the people's faith and their courage to come to the wall together and stay there, expressing themselves in silence and then in loud voices, the walls come tumbling down. This reminds us to keep ourselves open to our higher power, our higher nature. And it also reminds us that we need each other. Robert Frost's poem is a reminder that we sometimes make walls between each other without thinking, because it's what our parents did. Frost says of his neighbor that he moves in darkness. He likes having thought of his father's saying, so he says it again, good fences make good neighbors. But for Frost, who questions the need for a wall and its mending when there are no cattle to fence in, there's something more, something there is that doesn't love a wall, some yearning he has for walls to come tumbling down. So Frost is inviting us to notice and to stop doing things as they've always been done and to question. These are just some background thoughts for the story of the Berlin Wall. In some of our lifetimes, we have seen it rise and seen it tumble down. It stood as a deathly separation barrier from 1961 to 1989. And without further violence, with lots of shouting, people began crossing on November 9th, 1989. And after those same collection of people formed a human connective chain along the border, Germany was reunited in 1990. As some graffiti on a concrete section of the Berlin Wall said, walls are not everlasting. So, if the writing is on the wall, it might be useful to analyze the similarities and differences between Communist Germany's wall, the Israeli wall, begun in 2002, and the wall of the United States of America, begun in 2006. Those who build the walls are getting the credit here. When Germany was divided up after World War II, Berlin was also divided. The city of Berlin was divided into East and West, and in the first years, there was free movement through the whole city. East Berliners came to see that there were individual opportunities and freedom from security police in West Berlin. Already there's a commonality for Israel and the United States walls. Land was divided, and there was inequality, economic and political. In East Berlin, at first there was a trickle, and then there was a mass exodus of skilled people moving west by packing their bag and walking across the street. The government built the wall to stop people from following their desires, their yearnings. So consider what was and is being blocked by a physical wall. People's movement from lesser opportunity to more opportunity. Germany's purpose for the wall was to keep in their skilled workers. A distinction here. Israel's stated purpose for the wall is to keep out criminals, terrorists. And the U.S. stated purpose for the wall is to keep out criminals, drug traffickers, and unskilled workers without papers. The East German government built the Berlin Wall literally overnight. It recognized that a barrier in the middle of the city would be hated. And in the German situation, that meant that families were literally separated overnight, which led to, of course, strong reactions and deathly efforts to cross to the west. Soon there was increased oppression. Armed guards, towers, dogs, and more concrete were added over the years. So another parallel, physical separation that's oppressive leads to increased oppression, increased separation, and it's also been the same in Israel and the United States. Armed guards patrolling where there was once free movement. There were once open communities where people scarcely noticed a political border. On the west side of the German wall, where it could be approached directly, there were 45 miles of straight concrete, and there was a lot of graffiti, people's art. American peace promoter Terry Tillman first visited the Berlin Wall in 1988, and it seemed to him that the city of Berlin had a broken heart. The wall was a terrible symbol of human separation. And yet, when he walked along the west side of it, he noticed that the messages of the graffiti were colorful, poetic, humorous, artistic, hopeful, frustrated, and rarely hateful. He thought that someone ought to photograph those uplifting expressions. Now, about this time, the East German government allowed churches again. Their intent was to show that churches would fail and that they were unnecessary in a socialist state. Instead, before long, churches became the sites for citizen organizing for social reforms, beginning with environmental improvements. In Leipzig, the minister of a Lutheran church invited young people to a weekly prayer for peace, and that became the primary site for citizen organizing for their vision of a reunified Germany. Then resistance movements around Eastern Europe rose up and changed governments and structures so that there was more opportunity and more freedom for people in general. Poland and the ever-expanding Solidarity movement took many years to develop more open and democratic structures. And East Germans could see all of this happening. Mikhail Gorbachev moved along with the change, and he encouraged other leaders also to step aside. He saw that the times were changing. Hungary opened its border with Germany so East Germans could leave. So the East Berlin, East German people organized through churches. Other countries around them were successful with nonviolent resistance. And the most powerful political leader of the region supported inevitable changes in power relations, and then a neighboring country opened its border to them. The East German government saw it needed to do something, and it made a statement about easing travel restrictions. So when the low-level government official was asked when the restrictions would be eased, he said, well, right now. It was November 9th, 1989, and because it was reported on TV in West Berlin and Europe that East German travel restrictions had been lifted, East Berliners found out, and they found themselves moving toward the wall, a huge, relatively spontaneous demonstration of their yearning for opportunity and freedom. So when the gates were opened, they saw that West Berliners held banners welcoming them, and security guards stepped aside. Terry Tillman went back to Germany to witness the wall tumbling down and to photograph the graffiti and to meet people who were involved. And he invited his younger sister, from whom he had been estranged. He needed a translator, and she agreed to accompany him. As they watched Germans celebrate the fall of the wall and the possibilities of reunification, the brother and sister cleared their personal history, and they were also reunited. It's important to notice that it was through the generosity of the people who had been free to develop their lives and their fortunes that Germany was reunited in 1990. It's important to notice that people on both sides of the wall need to do their parts when it's time for the walls to come tumbling down and allow those beautiful open spaciousness and the connections to happen. Again, the Israeli and U.S. walls were also built to restrict movement, to keep people from moving freely, criminals, terrorists, drug dealers. And also, of course, what happened is family members are restricted, and the majority of border dwellers who yearn to work hard and live safely. As in the Butter Battle book, once people are separated, differences are exaggerated, and fear becomes a threat. And then that makes the separation seem to be justified. Still, across those lines in the sand, human beings know each other. Many are blood related. Mexican-American families are as intimately connected across the border as German families were. And Palestinian families also are separated from each other on both sides of Israel's wall. Those who are kept out hate the wall and feel oppressed by them. I heard former Mexican President Vicente Fox speak at K-State a couple of years ago. Maybe some of you heard him too. He's still bringing the same message to college campuses around the country. He said, "Good neighbors do not build separation walls." He always put separation in front of wall whenever he mentioned it. Good neighbors do not build separation walls. Good neighbors help each other with common problems, each doing what is theirs to do, and accountable for themselves rather than blaming. So he's still asking young people to do their part to find other ways to solve problems than a separation wall. There are increasing voices on both sides of today's walls who echo Fox, but they don't have sufficient power to make policy yet. Maybe we need to think it through a little longer. In these times of national budget challenges, the Associated Press put the pieces together to determine that $90 billion has been spent over the last 10 years, since 2001, on securing the U.S.-Mexican border. The border's 1,900 miles long. Most of it is not walled. Local people agree that the border is impossible to secure, and that the drug trade, which drives some of the traffic, cannot be addressed solely with border enforcement. The outgoing director of the U.S. Office of National Drug Control Policy said we need a holistic approach that includes prevention and treatment programs to lessen drug demand, as well as thinking about enforcement at the border. Associated Press writer Martha Mendoza talked with people on both sides of the wall this summer. She reported that El Paso County Judge Veronica Escobar calls the wall that winds through the south side of her city a rusting monument that makes my community look like a junkyard. She said the rows of 18-foot welded steel bars along the Rio Grande River don't do anything to address El Paso's costs from Mexico's drug wars. In her view, border residents have seen their communities used as a convenient backdrop to heated debates and political posturing about immigration and drug policies. The cost of victims of the Ciudad Juarez violence, transnational gangs, and crime falls on the city, and federal money is wasted on a wall. Now, for artists, political separation walls are a public canvas for expression. In Palestinian refugee camp at Bethlehem, I saw beautiful political cartoons, and graffiti and art of all types cover vast sections of Israel's wall. On the U.S. wall, people from both sides of the border painted a mural on the wall in 2005 at Ambos Nogales. It included a figure of Zapata, the land reform hero of the Mexican Revolution, who has a bandana that reads, La tierra es de quien la trabaja, or the land belongs to the person who works it. This is exactly what was on a mural in Chiapas, Mexico. So when the wall was about to be replaced, the mural was saved by intervention from Sierra Club in Tucson. So Border Patrol agents took the pieces of the wall that had the mural on it and laid them on the ground in Mexico, so the artists were able to use them. Another interesting story around that same time was that artists had built a steel and resin sculpture depicting four 14-foot human figures pushing against the wall from the Mexican side, and the University of Arizona purchased the piece. It's called Border Dynamics, and it's now displayed on campus. Another form of border art is creative efforts to connect across the walls, a kind of performance art. You might have heard about this is a little bit of an aside, but you might have heard about the woman who was walking from Phoenix to Minnesota, and she was calling her walk Going Home. She stayed at my house last weekend in Salina, and it was a very odd feeling because she had like these wonderful values about building community and pointing out connections people had, because she usually got her next place to stay from the previous person. The odd part for me was she also always had her camera on. So she was a performance artist, being real and being filmed, and I don't know... I left that experience kind of going, huh. It's a little bit like reality TV, I guess. I kind of just still a little bit mixed about that much openness. But anyway, that was my recent experience with performance art, and I'm still wondering. I know that there are Christian groups at the border with U.S. and Mexico, and that some of what they do is toss the elements of communion over the wall so that they can literally share the bread and the wine with each other, showing that they're Christians together despite the wall. And I bet there's a lot of other very interesting things going on that go across connections there. I'd love to see some of those, or read, or even see it on a video if somebody's willing to be on camera. When I was in Israel is there's a group of Israelis who moved to Sderot, which is right next door to Gaza, and a place that gets a lot of those little bombs that Palestinians sometimes set off. And so it was a pretty dangerous place to be, but a small community, maybe a couple hundred activists, chose to settle there because they wanted to make human person-to-person connections with people on the other side of the wall. And so they have no political affiliation, they have no agenda other than how can we connect people to people and what can we do that shows our common humanity. It was exhausting work, and it was also very meaningful. So that's a way to live next to a wall in a way that reaches through or across. One thing they did was talk to each other on the phone every week right across the wall, and I found that very interesting, that holes can be made in the wall. The idea that the people in West Germany, those who had the opportunities to develop themselves and their state, had an openness to change. When the wall came down, or even before it came down, there was a generosity of spirit and a welcoming that enabled that situation to make such a huge dramatic change, and especially so quickly. It's helpful to know that there are costs to opening walls, and that it's good to be prepared for knowing that there is some cost. I've come to believe that how we live embodies our values, whether we act in conventionally political ways or not, and that how we live influences others. So for some of us, the unbelievable image of Joshua and the Jericho story of walls tumbling down because they were encircled and there were trumpets and shouts, that'll keep us smiling as we find our voices and seek social policies that open things up. For others of us, the project is to remember that what's ours to do in these times is likely to be different than what our parents did. When a separation was expected, and it was even possible in previous generations, it now isn't. And maybe Frost's poem was a gentle prophecy, something there is that doesn't love a wall. So preparing our hearts, practicing opening walls among those we know, and recognizing what's ours to do in relation to separation walls that have been built by Israel and the United States is a spiritual and an activist opportunity. It's something that faces us in our time and place. And we have the spacious Kansas prairie to show us what beauty is. This spaciousness can be a source of faith. It can be a source of hope when we face whatever wall there is that we're facing. Walls in ourselves, walls between us, walls at borders. It helps me to remember that before there was a wall, there was spaciousness. And after the wall comes tumbling down, there will be spaciousness. The Berlin Wall lasted for 28 years until 1989 when it was opened and then destroyed. The challenge for those of us who put our faith and our lives at the service of beauty and inclusiveness is how long will other walls last? Again, walls are not everlasting. So I just offer you this metaphor, and if the wall metaphor is useful to you, or if you thought of anything else, we're glad to hear your responses and engagement.
Jim Chanteau, two comments. The first one on the Berlin Wall. I was there about 5 years ago, and you can't find the wall anymore. There's nothing left. And the reason is that people on both sides have gone there and taken pieces of it, taken it home, and it's now a kind of a souvenir. The tourists coming there want to see the wall, and so the Germans have had to rebuild a section of it to show what the wall used to look like, because there was no original wall left. And I thought that was, yeah, it is kind of funny. But the second comment is walls don't have to be physical. And I'm thinking of Cuba, or Cuba, as they would call it. We have built a wall around that country without any physical material at all. I was recently looking, our family is considering taking a cruise next year, and one of the more interesting cruises actually just goes all the way around the country of Cuba. But it never lands there. It visits all the other islands around there. How is it that this country, so close to us, all these years later, with this metaphorical wall we have built around it, still is separated from us?
Larry Weaver. Again, two comments. One, your story, the Dr. Seuss story, did have an echo in the German situation. I was lucky enough to visit East Germany in 1989 before the wall came down, and the language was actually a little bit different. I mean, the tour guide pointed out the phrases that they used, the idioms in East Germany that were different, had become different over just the 20 years or so. So walls do promote the development of differences, and that's one of the problems with a wall. Now, the other walls, there are all sorts of problems with those, and I certainly hope in the long haul that all of those walls come down. But I think it's important for us to remember that people and countries can make mistakes. I mean, Gorbachev, for example, rightly gets enormous credit for the fall of the Berlin Wall and the complete reorganization of Eastern Europe. But Gorbachev earlier had brutally suppressed what he perceived as problems in Georgia, for example. And so I hope we can remember that even when people and countries, as I think certainly the U.S. in this situation is, even when we make mistakes, it's possible to do better. And Gorbachev certainly did ultimately do a lot better.
I have never supported the U.S. wall because I'm not anti-immigrant, and I think we need the people. So we need the labor. In about 10 years, we're going to have a real problem in this country with a labor shortage, and we're not reproducing. The Israeli wall is a much more complicated wall because they're not keeping out terrorists. Just terrorists, because we were there in 74, and the terrorists were coming over the border from Syria every day. But people could cope. The suicide bombers were a different kind of terrorist, and Israeli was driven to extremes. I do not support the Netanyahu government. Palestine had been offered a number of peace treaties for two states. They've turned it down. They say only if there is unlimited right of return, which can't work for Israel. And I know that the wall has been. Some of it's more legitimate in its placement than others, but I think it's an unjust situation. I do not support Netanyahu, but Arafat after the peace treaty with Yitzhak Rabin fell through, he went back and said, "We're going to have another intifada." That was the to radicalize the Israeli government. It worked eventually. There were two other good peace treaties after that. It worked. You have a terrible situation there. And I think the other thing that people, I was talking to a friend this past week, and I think that this is something that has to be noted, that there is a very strong feeling on the part of the Palestinians that the survivors should have gone to Kenya. Rather, there was a social infrastructure in Palestine for the survivors. The survivors did not pick themselves up and be, we're free. They were in very bad shape. They needed to be re-socialized. Much of this is not known.
Marilyn Caldwell, there are other things besides walls that are similar to walls, and that is language. Look at Montreal, for instance. There's people who can't go to Montreal because they can't understand the language. And there needs to be more openness in that, too. People who are so adamant of keeping their language when there should be a common language, because language, without a common language, you don't understand each other at all. So it's not physical wall, but it is a human wall, a barricade.
Stacy Brofman. I grew up in El Paso, Texas, and I saw that wall many, many, many times. And I will tell you that as a child, when I saw it, the first thing that I thought of when this chain link and iron barricade reminded me of one of those poorly maintained roadside zoos, where they were caging in poor animals that really needed to be free. And I think that we really need to put more money. If they want to stop people from passing drugs across that border, then that's what they need to focus on. But to not focus on somebody that is willing to die of dehydration and exposure just trying to get to a better life. I think in Manhattan, we're also seeing walls of a certain kind, if not being built, but being maintained by city commission not wanting to fund social services, by repealing the anti-discrimination ordinance. All they're trying to do is to cage in people, to try to protect I don't know who, but I believe that those are definitely walls of another kind as well.
Michael Oldfather, some of you know this story or part of this. I was working on my master's in economics and ran out of money, and so I was desperate enough to take a job teaching seventh grade language arts. A school district was desperate enough for a teacher to take me on, and had a wonderful program that I inherited there, to which involved 36 pieces of literature, one a week. Most of them were poems. Some were excerpts from essays or from journals or something like that. But this was one of the poems. And 162 kids and I spent a week with Mending Wall. And it was one of the most rewarding teaching experiences of my life. And watching these seventh graders, and which was, you know, like a different kind of sideshow much of the time. And so, but, you know, you have people who are physically all the way from about 9 to 17 and emotionally all the way from about that same range and not necessarily in the same bodies. So it was just a wonderful experience, a humbling experience. It was a lot harder than teaching economics to work with these. But the things that these children came up with a little prodding about the symbolism was, you know, I think some people don't give 12-year-olds enough credit for what they are able to do when they are given some room to move with it. And all of this poem, as you read it, I thought of children acting out pieces of it and of trying to come to grips with it, just getting the understanding of it, and then going beyond that. It is a wonderful poem, and it was wonderful to hear it, and it was great to use with this topic.
The issue here is walls between people, but I'm going to move into something on the prairie just for the fun of it. And I just wanted to say that there are some functional walls that have been on the prairie, walls of sod houses keeping out the winter winds and snow, the walls of the old stone houses providing happy homes, keeping the elements out. Okay, barbed-wired fences sometimes keeping the cattle or roaming pigs or whatever away. So I just wanted to mention that, and I'm certainly thankful that this morning that we've got some good walls keeping out the heat and the air conditioning running. Happy day.
Since she presented another view, I just wondered why our president, who went over to Berlin and said, for the American people's attitude, tear down this wall. And that was repeated over and over again. So I think we need to give him and the American people credit for their feelings about it.
I have a comment. One thing, as you were talking, I mean, obviously these walls that separate people and create bad feelings between them are a negative, but people like to do things that make them feel special and unique, and that separates us from each other as well. But I missed last week's program, which was about individualism. And it just seems like, you know, where do these separations stop being bad and start being good? Are they ever? I mean, it seems like some things we do have to be okay. Like, we all like our unique cultures and our unique things that make us special. So, you know, there's a continuum, and where does that stop? It's a question, it's not a thought.
I just love coming here. You expanded and enhanced the metaphor, and thank you very much. I really appreciate your capacities and your responsiveness. We're going to learn a new song, and the choir's going to help by singing it first.
Here's what we're going to do with this. The words are on the back of the insert, or the front of the insert, and we're going to sing the chorus and the first verse, and then ask you to stand and join with us. Now, the rhythm is very great, very nice, and it'll take some getting used to. If you lag behind, catch up when you can. If you get ahead of us, wait for us, we'll do it together and see how it goes. It was a nice song, fits in well with the program, it was nice of Thea to force us to learn it. And so some of the choir are going to help lead it. All right. Would you play the introduction? We'll just...
Thank you. beautiful. Our closing words are from Mae Sarton. Help us to be the always hopeful gardeners of the Spirit, who know that without darkness, nothing comes to birth, as without light, nothing flowers. Go in peace. Have a good week.